Podtacular 362 Tuning Fork for April 18th, 2013.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dust Storm.
And I'm your other host, Brent Gamer.
And this week, we are bringing you another episode full of bulletin update stuff, but we also have an additional thing that we are bringing to you this week. If you listen to our past two shows, then you will know that we have a special guest on to talk about a very special cinema series that is actually premiering next week on Tuesday. And said person behind said machinima is Cruel Legacy. So welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. Glad to be here, and thanks to everybody for tuning in.
So you are the man behind the curtains of the Playtime series Machinima, which is now in its fourth season, which will be released on April 22nd on Halo Waypoint. That is quite an achievement to have four seasons of a machinima out there. So you are joining the ranks of other Halo machinimas out there, and it's definitely exciting to see what content you're bringing to the table.
Well, thank you. It's I'm as surprised as anybody. I really never intended for this to be a thing. You know, when I first made it, it was a few little shorts, and it was just supposed to be sort of a one-time thing to have a little bit of fun and experiment with. And I got the machinima bug, and I just stuck with it. So yeah, I'm really excited to be bringing this to everybody. I try to do new stuff with it every single time to keep it fresh for myself as well as the audience. And hopefully everybody else will enjoy it. So,
very nice. I have been graced with the ability to see some of the episodes with a pre-screen, and I have to say, oh my gosh, flares! My eyes hurt.
Right.
My eyes hurt.
I've been watching a lot of J.J. Abrams movies since I made the last season. So
too many lens flares. Just too many lens flares.
Never too many lens flares.
Dial down the brightness, Scotty. Anyways, we're going to go ahead and start off with the Playtime stuff, and then we'll dive into the bulletin and our submissions for the week. So for our listeners who have not even heard of Playtime before, which is probably far and few between, but for those few, why don't you give a little history of the Playtime show series and how it started and how it got to where it is today?
Sure. Yeah. So Playtime is it's a comedic machinima series. I started to add a little more action into it as the show went on, but basically it's a comedy. I make the show almost completely on my own. I've started to bring in more and more help as the years go on here. But for the most part, it's sort of my baby. I do the writing. I do the bulk of the voice acting, although, I've got a lot of new voice actors in this season, which I'm really excited about. I do all the body character acting, which is the real nightmare. That's the part that, I would love to get help on if there's any way possible to do that. But, nothing that's quite really come out and worked yet. And you know, I initially put it together because I just love so many different elements of Halo and love doing so many different things within Halo. And I wanted to, do a project where I could bring all of that together and bring it all into one thing. So, you know, I love making videos and so that's a given when you're doing machinima already. And then I love doing Forge work. So it was a great chance for me to build these really cool sets and locations and really get to know theater mode inside and out and master using the theater camera. And I also do the soundtrack for the show, which is another huge chunk of it. You know, I do all the original music for each season. So, I mean, that's a bit of a background to the show itself. You know, it stars these two characters named Warren and Cobra, and they're a couple of kind of idiot buddies who start off at the very beginning of the first season, just helping to train. Cobra comes to Warren for help training, and it doesn't really go very well, and things kind of go from there, right? And the story has progressed into a deeper story since then, of course, with more drama and excitement and all the things that you usually want to keep you hooked. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Now, there's a few scenes that we've seen in past seasons of or past episodes of Playtime and this season coming up where there's kind of a integration with Red versus Blue. Have you worked with them in putting these scenes in, or is this kind of something that you're just doing on your own?
I just do it on my own with their permission. I mean, the nice thing about a show like Playtime, and I do the show completely for free. There's no money. I don't monetize the videos at all. So with all that involved, it was very easy for me to go to them and say, hey, look, there's this thing I want to do. Would this be a problem for you guys? And I asked them back at in the third season was the first time I ever integrated the Red versus Blue characters directly, although I did sort of, I had a black armored robot named Lopez in the first season, which was a very deliberate sort of nod, and you're supposed to watch that going, hey, is that the same guy? But basically in season three, I introduced the idea that my characters existed in the same geographical location as the Red versus Blue characters. And so every now and then I'd have a moment with them sort of standing up on top of a cliff edge, looking down and watching the characters from Red versus Blue during the Blood Gulch Chronicles, right? So I just pull audio straight out of past episodes of Red versus Blue and then work it into my own show. And there will be a little more of that in season four. You're going to see a little more indirect interaction between them, which I'm excited to see how people react to that.
I don't know if I would call that indirect, but yeah.
Well, direct without knowing, I'll say.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else can we expect from season four that's kind of a little bit different from the previous season? I know you released a ViDoc a couple of weeks ago, kind of detailing some of the behind-the-scenes visual effects that you're putting into this fourth mm-hmm. season. Is there anything specifically that you're paying a lot of attention to for this season, or is it just something that's kind of a natural progression for the series?
Well, it's there's a few sort of really strong pillars that I wanted to focus on going into. I mean, I'll take a step back and say that I'm always focusing on the obvious stuff, like make the writing better, make the camera work better, make the music better, make the, you know, like sort of the that sort of stuff that you try to improve every single time you go around, right? So aside from all that, I really, really put a lot of work into the visual effects for this one, far beyond what I've ever done before, and which has, I mean, it's basically doubled my workload in producing this season. But I think, you know, looking back on it now, I think it worked out to be very much worthwhile. It makes the show far more visually striking than it was before. I mean, Halo Reach is already a beautiful game, and I use a bit of Halo 4 in this season as well. And so I'm filming using great looking games to begin with, which is of course helpful. I think that the visual effects just set it that little bit of a level above most machinimas that you see out there. So I'm happy with how that's turned out. And another big, big thing I really want to focus on was, involvement from the Halo community. It's something that, I've never really done too much of with Playtime before because it is so much of basically a one-man production for the most part. But, I'm such a huge fan, and I'm constantly just in awe of what a amazing, hardworking, talented, and giving community the Halo community is, and I wanted to get more people from the community involved in making season four, and so I've done that in a lot of different ways. Everything from having you know, fellow members of the community do some voice acting to things like I got Pete the Duck involved a little bit with helping me out with some custom game and forge mechanics to create some of the scenes. I've got, you know, listeners of this show are, I'm sure, know Grim Brother One, and I've got his band on the soundtrack. You know,
nice.
Yeah. I'm pulling in members from the community in every way possible. There was a really, really awesome Playtime season 4 poster, made by, Hedge Money, who, you know, lots of people who will know him from Twitter or the HBO forums. And he made just a really, really cool poster to promote the season a couple months back now. And so it's just something that, for me, playtime is a celebration of everything I love about Halo. And a big part of that is the community. And so getting the community involved is really important to me. And it's really special to me. It's something I'm really excited about.
Are there any specific characters that are being introduced here that you can hint on? Are there characters returning from past seasons that are kind of iconic that people should really look out for? Give us a little bit of the story in terms of like what you want to release for, like, give us just a taste of what we can expect for season 4.
So the basic setup is that for anyone who watched season 3, they'll remember that at the very end of season 3, the show ends with Warren, who's one of the main characters, just blurting out to Cobra that he's fallen in love with Cobra's girlfriend. And the season ends right there on that note. And that really is the big setup for season 4. It gets into a very silly and comedic kind of contest between the two characters, where they decide that they're both in love with the same woman, and the only way they're going to be able to settle this is a sort of a series of like feats of strength type competitions, right? To basically one up each other and prove who the better man is. And of course they decide to go ahead with all this without ever even mentioning any of this to, you know, the woman that they're both supposedly fighting for, which is, you know, part of the ridiculousness of the whole situation. But, so there's that. And then that's going to be sort of the running main plot behind the season. I've brought back, several characters. The main one who I'm excited to bring back is, the character of Dwight, who, in the previous season, Dwight was a minor character. Yeah.
Dirt.
He ran the dirt store. And, the response from the Playtime fans and the Playtime community over his character was just nuts. Everybody fell in love with him. You know, the video, the episode that he first appeared in got just a huge response. Everybody loved him. And I'd only planned for him to be just a tiny little bit character in season 3. So he's got a more substantial role in season 4. I think he actually has about as much screen time as Warren or Cobra, the two main characters. So he's in it a bunch, which I'm really happy about. It's my younger brother who does the voice of Dwight. And, it just cracks me up every time he says anything. It makes it a real joy to write for him, because I don't even have to write anything funny. Whatever I write, he'll make it sound funny, just the way he does the lines. So people can look forward to that. And then there's lots and lots of little cameos throughout the season. There's some a little more major than others. You know, there's a new character coming in for, she has a fairly predominant role in the back half of the season. Her name is Jennifer, and she's voiced by Danny Cherry. So that's really, really exciting for me. She does just a wonderful job with the voice performance on this character, and I think people like her a lot. And then lots of other cameos as well. And I don't know if you want to spoil the surprise here, but I think now's as good a time as any to tell people that they can expect a little appearance from yourself.
Yeah, I actually did a couple lines, and it was a lot of fun. And seeing the end result just made it even that much more awesome. And there's another big time Halo person out there. I don't know if you want to mention his name or keep that as a surprise.
No, I'll throw it out there.
Okay.
We get you and Green Skull co-starring in an episode together, and you both just nailed it. It worked really, really well. And I have appearances by Tom and the Wolf of the Dust and Echoes podcast in a later episode as well, and they do an equally fantastic job. So yeah, there's cameos in there that I'm really excited about, and lots and lots of new minor characters as well. But for the most part, this one is really going to be about, it's funny. It's almost a little bit more of an emotional story than the previous seasons have been. But I think it's funnier as well. I try to keep the the comedy really front and center through the most of it while telling, it's basically like a sort of, you know, high school romance drama story, right? Sort of like something out of, an old episode of 90210 or something cheesy like that. But in this sort of just slapstick comedy vibe, I was going for something like, you know how every now and then shows like The Simpsons will sneak up on you and, you know, you'll be watching an episode and laughing your head off. And then before you know it, you'll realize that they've actually hit on something that's kind of touching and then, beyond just making you laugh. And that was the sort of vibe I was going for. So it's not heavy by any means, but I definitely want it to get under people's skin a little more than previous seasons have. So, we'll see. I'm excited to see how people react to it.
I think people are going to enjoy the season. I've seen a good part of it. I think probably three quarters. I forget if you're doing eight or nine episodes, but I've seen the first six.
I'm doing eight. So, okay. Yeah. I've got the last two, so I'll send them to you.
I think you guys will not be disappointed. If you've enjoyed Playtime in the past, I think you're going to be very impressed by this season of Playtime because he's gone over and beyond for just the visual effects. It gives this new kind of feel. And you were actually on a episode of Sandbox with Key on The Running Riot, and you said that a fan actually came up or someone you were showing one of the videos off to, you showed off one of the scenes from a lightning storm, and someone came up to you and said, "I didn't know that you could turn on lightning in the game."
Yeah, that was I posted a screenshot. For people who haven't seen it yet, I have a Vidoc. It's called Inclement Weather, Playtime Season 4 Vidoc, and it's going through how I make all the visual effects for this season. And there's a shot in there of a lightning storm. I took footage of Ragnarok in Halo 4, and by using animation and effects, After Effects, I changed the scenery into like a dark, stormy night with rain and lightning and all that. And I took a screenshot of that and posted it on my Playtime Facebook page. I've got a Facebook page for the show where I'm posting stuff there every day, either just little screenshots of stuff I'm working on or little just stories about the development process. And I posted a screenshot on there. Yeah. And the first comment was, "Oh, cool. I didn't know you could do that in Halo 4. Which was like, my first reaction was to be like, "No, you're not understanding all the work I put into this." But at the end of the day, I'm like, well, that's
probably one of the best compliments you can get.
Yeah, it's the perfect reaction. It means he looked at it and didn't think it looked weird or bad or wrong. It just looked like it was raining on Ragnarok. And that's perfect, right? That's exactly what I'm hoping for. So yeah, that made me chuckle.
I think it's come a long way if it's to that point where you're getting people that are just recognizing something that is actually not there, and I think that's very, very cool to see more machinima come up like that.
Well, it's a really fine edge that you got to walk along, right? Especially when you get down this rabbit hole of visual effects and adding lens flares and adding, you know, I've got little water droplets on the camera lens that shine when the light hits, and all this stuff like that. You can start to get to the point where you're so zoned in on it that it's like, okay, at what point have I done too much, right? At what point does somebody tune in to watch this and just say, I can't even watch the characters because of all this crap going on, you know? And so it's a really fine line to walk, and I'm always paranoid that I'm going to cross that line. And so to get that sort of a reaction of people saying, that looks normal, that looks right, that's perfect. That's exactly what I'm hoping for. So, hopefully, everybody will have that reaction. You know, hopefully people aren't watching it going, "Oh, this is just too much." So, it's working out nicely so far.
There was a while when after Playtime season 3 where you weren't sure if you were going to do a fourth season of Playtime. Is, with this season almost nearly done, do you still have ideas that are in your head on episodes that you would like to do that you could conjure up into future seasons? And is this something that you would continue to pursue after this season is over?
It's hard for me to say. I have an idea for something else that I want to make other than Playtime. And, I've wanted to make that since, you know, I was halfway through making season three when I got this idea for something else. And so I've been putting that off for a long time, and I'm starting to really get itching to make that happen. But having said that, I do really love making playtime. I think some of it's going to depend on, you know, what Halo 5 ends up being like. I'm not likely to do a big season in Halo 4. I have too many problems with filming in Halo 4. I've done a whole bunch of playtime shorts in Halo 4. While I've been making this season, I've made, you know, four different little standalone short episodes, just to sort of celebrate new map packs and things like that. And, I just don't enjoy working in Halo 4 nearly as much. So I don't expect to do a full season. But, you know, if Halo 5 comes along and I love the way it looks, and I love the aesthetic of the armor, and I love the camera functions, that might be enough to pull me back in, because I absolutely do have ideas for more stuff, and I've become very attached to this show, and the community around the show is fantastic. You know, I have a really wonderful and engaging fan base that I love interacting with. I think they've responded really well to the fact that I'm not particularly precious about what I'm working on. You know, if I'm working on a cool looking scene, I'm on the Facebook page posting screenshots of it, and I'm not keeping it totally top secret and tight lipped about it, and which is what, you know, video game fans are typically used to, right? There's, you know, when a new game's coming out, you don't hear anything about it until, you know, it's out more or less, right? You'll get a little trailer here and a little you know, behind the scenes video there, but everything's so secretive. And so I think it's people just have fun, kind of, they feel like they're sharing in the process, getting to see what I'm working on. And that definitely is something that I don't want to just ditch now that I'm done season four. You know, it would suck to let that community go. So,
right. I guess to wrap up this discussion before we move on to the Halo Bulletin stuff, is there anything you would like to see in Halo 5 to add to the whole filmmaking experience, like additional tools in theater or anything that you can think of that would make your job a little bit easier when you're making this kind of a show?
Oh, well, definitely. I mean, you know, not to sound snarky about it, but I'd love to see the tools that are already there just work properly. And I don't mean that in a snarky or complaining way, because there are wonderful tools in Halo 4, but they're also buggy and glitchy, and there's these weird little oddities with all of them that really prevent them from being as truly useful as they could be. And so, if nothing else, if we got the exact same feature set that we have, but all the features just worked flawlessly, that would be a huge improvement. Of course, ideally, I'd like to have more than that. I'd like to have, I would love some sort of controls over camera effects, things like depth of field and some focus controls. And I'd love to do things like, I don't know if you're familiar at all with the Source Filmmaker. But
I haven't done anything with it, but I know of it and know how powerful it can be.
Yeah, I haven't done anything with it either, but just looking at the way it works, it's based on a foundation quite similar to Halo's theater mode, but they've just expanded the feature set in a lot of really smart ways. And one of the things that they've done that I think would be a huge, huge benefit to Halo is this idea of multi-pass recording. And so what that is, for anybody who doesn't know, is right now when you play a game of Halo and you're making Machinima, you set up a custom game and you move your characters around the way you want them to move, and the game records all that movement data. So you can go into theater mode and the game recreates it. It recreates all the player movements and motions that you've done, and then you can film it. But what the Source Filmmaker allows you to do is it allows you to do that same process, but it allows you to layer multiple passes. So for somebody like me who records the show by myself, I could play a custom game where I have a character walking down a hallway, and then I could load that into their theater mode and now control a second character and make him walk alongside the first character whose movement is already stored. And then I can do that as many times as I want. So I could have, I could single-handedly control as many characters I want by just redoing pass over pass over pass. And it just records this additional character and sticks it on top of the other characters that are already moving around. And something like that would be just an incredible, incredible tool. And, yeah, just, you know, I get really excited thinking about the possibilities of something like that, you know, to be able to have one person have really precise and detailed control over multiple characters like that is exciting, because using multiple body actors, allows you to have multiple characters on screen. But as the, you know, the director, so to speak, you lose a lot of control over how those characters move, where they look, and so on. So being able to do it all yourself would be great.
There's a couple other things I could think of, like possibly posting an anchor point for a camera and then being able to rotate around it.
Oh, God, yeah.
That'd be something to really look to do. I want to see weather effects or day and night time things. I would love to see that kind of thing be put into... I mean, it's not directly related to theater, but have it as a forge option, and then you basically turn any environment into almost a whole another map, if you think about it, just because of how it's designed. I mean, look at the Requiem mission from the campaign, and then look at the Spartan Ops equivalent, the one that's at nighttime when you're doing the missions on there. It feels like two different maps, just because you're playing from day to night. And it'd be really cool to see those kinds of effects be put in the game. And then for you, you wouldn't have to worry about doing rain on what, four different layers?
Yeah, exactly. It would just be, something like that would be, like you said, it would be a great benefit to the entire game. And it was something that would, of course, be useful to the machinima crowd and people who use theater mode, but it'd be useful to much more than just that, right? It's something that would prove everything about the game. So, that's something that I'm, of course, hoping for.
Awesome. Brent, did you have any questions about playtime before we head over to the other topics?
No. I think we pretty much covered it.
Alrighty.
Unless you've got more questions or the chat has more questions. So if you have a question, now would be the time to put it in.
Halo Fan for Life. Go for it.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, Halo Fan for Life was asked about the idea of having a terrain editor. Halo 5.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be amazing. I mean,
it'd be interesting to see like a PC suite of tools somehow similar to what they did for Halo 2 and Halo Custom Edition, where you could actually import a map, like make it like maybe a $100 kit or something that you can buy, install on your computer, and then you can basically create your own maps from scratch. And then if you have XNA, which is another thing where you can, I think it's like a, was it $100 a year for XNA Studio, something like that? Maybe if you have like both of those pieces, then you can actually create your own map. And I think if 343 would be able to pull that off, that would increase the longevity of the game by light years.
Yeah.
Because you would constantly have these maps coming out from the community, these new multiplayer spaces. And of course, 343 would be kind of the gatekeepers for quality control. But I think if we see some of these maps be generated by the community, because I mean, we've already seen how talented people are with just the Forge system as it is today.
Yeah.
And imagine what you could see come out if people actually had access to the tools that the developers used, and if they're willing to spend that extra $200 to actually go out and make these maps and have them integrated into Halo, that would be freaking amazing.
Well, and there's not to speak for everybody, but I'm pretty sure that there is a market for, I mean, I don't want to say it this way, but I mean, there's almost a market for another product here. Like, cause I totally understand how we're getting into the sort of stuff that is so niche to the overall community. I mean, so few people in the total community would use these sorts of like detailed theater tools that I'm talking about or terrain editors, things like that. But, you know, like if there was a Halo 4 machinima set or Halo 4 machinima app or something like that, and it's like, you know, pay $20 and you get a separate game that launches that's just the machinima making tools using the Halo 4 assets, and you launch it as a separate thing, and the whole thing is built from the ground up for making machinima. I mean, there would be enough people to be all over that to justify some dev time, right? And putting it together and making it happen. And I bet the Forge community would be similar. Now, the catch is, of course, is figuring out how do you do that without then splintering the community, right? You don't want to have things available in one set that don't feed directly into the other. So there'd be, you know, it's easier said than done, but.
Right.
You know, yeah.
I think another solution would be release the games on the PC.
Yeah. Not going to happen anytime soon.
I mean, there's enough modders out there that would be more than happy to create that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, you just answered your own question, though. There's enough modders out there. And that that right there is enough for Microsoft to keep Halo off the PC as long as they possibly can.
They gave us the tools for Halo 1 and Halo 2 to mod them. They gave us those tools as part of the offering.
The thing is that since those games came out, though, the PC gaming landscape has changed, and it is so.
But they're modding tools for just about every other big title game out there. You have modding tools for Team Fortress. You have modding tools for Skyrim, and those games are very, very, very successful.
They're incredibly successful, I don't think this is a good thing. Like, I'm not saying that Microsoft is taking the right approach with this. The problem is when you get into people who mod are people who are essentially learning how to alter the game, right? And so whether that's through tool sets that are built into the game or coming up with their own tool sets and just, you know, the game allows them to plug this stuff in, or they find ways to plug it in, whether the game allows them to or not, it's people breaking the game. And the modding community is traditionally a fantastic group of people who come up with cool, fun, and creative stuff to do that, you know, the games weren't intended to do. But there's also, you know, if you know how to do that side of it, then, you know, there's people who will use that same knowledge to pirate the game, break the game in other ways, screw up multiplayer experiences. And that percentage is a very, very small percentage of the modding community. You know, it's totally just a select few kind of ruining it for everybody else who gets into modding for all the, you know, the right reasons.
The right reasons.
Yeah. Well, they couldn't possibly ruin the game more than 343 did, right?
<Tro-lo-lo-lo-lo>.
No, 343 did all right with Halo 4. With the resources that they had and with them being their first game, they did all right. They definitely dropped the ball on some things, but...
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. I love Halo 4.
Yeah,
I
know.
I just wanted to make that joke while it's still fresh.
We all know that that's the running joke. So
comedy is 90% timing, and if I didn't get it in right then and there, it wouldn't have worked. So,
yeah. So there's lots of different things that you can probably add to the sandbox just from the theater perspective and being able to record in different ways for Halo. So it'd be interesting to see what they come out with in terms of theater for Halo 5.
Definitely, yeah. And I'm excited to see it. I think it's going to be pretty cool.
Okay, moving on then to the bulletin. We have
good stuff.
Yeah, we got a few good things in here. Nothing too juicy as we've seen in the past bulletins, and I think we're kind of at that point where we're no longer going to have these massive bulletins with massive amounts of topics in them. I think we're kind of over that last hump with the last DLC coming out 2 weeks ago. Three weeks ago? Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
Already last DLC, I should say.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
is it
all
just
the
me
announced or, DLC.
Like, is it just me, or is this, like, has Halo 4 kind of, have we burned through Halo 4 pretty quickly as far as its DLC cycle?
It seems like we have, and I have a couple of theories on why that may be, but that's topics for another show.
Sure.
I think. I've been saying this over and over again, and it's going to happen. We're going to have shows talking about all different aspects of the Halo 4 sandbox and where 343 hit the mark and where they didn't. And we're going to have numerous shows on those. So I have a few theories to that. So we'll talk about that definitely in the future show.
Cool.
And those will probably be some big roundtable discussions where we have upwards of 7-8 people on talking about them. Because I want a wide variety of opinions on those shows, because those are important shows I think people will want to listen to.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on to the bulletin. For those that are into the competitive scene, this last weekend was the 5th AGL event for this year. It was AGL Nashville. and they were streaming all day from Friday through Sunday for Halo 4. And for those that follow closely, Pulse Esports took the trophy for first place in the tournament. So congrats to those guys. Definitely look out for the next AGL event, which will be, I think, within... I think it's within the next month. It's AGL Pittsburgh. I'm looking up the details now. It's May 11th. So it's a... and I believe Halo Fan for Life, who's in the chat right now, is going to that one. And he's going to see if he can cover it. So we'll be on the lookout for him while he's there. I forget how many events they had planned, but they have quite a few of them planned where they're probably doing upwards of one at least every month, possibly two. So they're definitely trying to push out the whole tournament scene and get a lot of events out there for teams to come out and play. So if you're into that competitive stuff, definitely check out AGL because they have tournaments in a lot of major cities and they're trying to really cover the continental U.S. Very well so teams can go out and play from lots of different areas. And there was actually a team this weekend that really put some of the pro teams that have been out there before to the test. So it was really fun to watch. AGL has also posted some videos of each matchup on their YouTube channel. So you can also watch some of those games if you missed any of those during the weekend. Are any of you two into the whole competitive scene? Is it something that you pay attention to? Is it something that you watch it just for the fun of watching Halo? What's your kind of view?
I have all the respect in the world for those guys, but it honestly doesn't interest me in the least. And I they're amazing, amazing players, and that's a lot of hard work and dedication. And I respect the pure skill involved, but, it's just not something I find the competitive settings that they use, I personally find boring. The competition is always exciting, like just like watching any sport, right? When you're watching a really heated match that's, you know, two really amazing teams neck and neck, there's a thrill to that, of course. The only times I'm ever somewhere where I could be watching people play, I could also be playing myself, and I'd always rather play than watch other people play, even though I'm nowhere near as good as those guys. It's just video games are something that I enjoy playing, not watching, personally speaking. So,
okay, Brent, what about you? I know that you came with me and Greg to the first MLG event we ever went to, which was MLG Dallas 2009. Has your competitive views changed since then? Now that Halo's off the MLG circuit, and now it's moved into a little bit smaller arena for competitive Halo.
I was marginally interested in MLG, you know, back in those, you know, 2010, you know, MLG Dallas events and things like that. But even then, I wasn't really interested in competitive Halo. It's pretty fun to watch, but just knowing I could never actually play at that level was just more frustrating than anything else. You know, back in the Halo 2 days, Potacular had the pro clans and the rec clans and stuff, and I was decent at Halo 2, but I was nowhere near what the pros could do. And I don't know. Just competitive gaming doesn't really interest me that much. Like, I'll watch it. If somebody, you know, if there's a big tournament or something going on and everybody's excited about it, I'll watch it with them, but I'm more interested in the game as it was intended to be played by the general public. When 343 went to make Halo 4, they made it for a specific audience, which was different than the audience they got. You know, Bungie had a completely different audience than Halo 4 did.
Yeah.
You know, there's probably a set of people that did not buy Halo 4 because it wasn't a Bungie product. In the Halo community, there were definitely some people who were more Bungie fans than they were Halo fans. And so when Bungie left, they left with Bungie, and they're probably waiting for Destiny right now, like I am. But it's a different audience, you know. I'm just not a part of that competitive gaming audience, I guess. Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
If anything, I'm just kind of somewhere between the casual and the hardcore Halo player, as far as actually playing the game constantly, all the time, getting better all the time. I'm active in the Halo community probably more than most people are, just by virtue of, you know, being on the podcast. But yeah, I don't actually play Halo as much as some people I know on my friends list who, you know, play all day, every chance they get. And they're obviously better at the game than I am. But I mean, because of the relatively low skill level I'm at, I just cannot get interested in competitive Halo.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's not for everybody. Competitive Halo is definitely a niche, kind of like how Griffball is. It takes a different skill set to play both of those compared to just the casual sit back and relax Halo. And I know I've dabbled into the competitive stuff. I'm very competitive when I play, and I know playing with a few people that are on my friends list, I have a couple people that are competitive as well, and I try to play on their level, and I fail most of the time, but it's still, at least for me, it is something of interest because it is another one of those corners of the Halo community that we try to embrace just from the fact that they are part of our family as a whole.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, competitive gaming in general is important and it's growing. I think we're going through some real particular growing pains with competitive gaming right now, both in terms of the systems around it, like how how people can watch it. You know, the infrastructure behind competitive gaming has a long way to go before it matches other competitive, you know, sports. It's just not, it's not as enjoyable to sit and watch competitive gaming because it's hard to get a good stream. It's hard to get decent audio. The commentating, there are some commentators who are great, but they're few and far between. You know, there's a real art to competitive sports commentating. You know, there's a certain level of following the action, but also explaining the action to the viewers so that somebody who doesn't know what these players are thinking can get a glimpse into the competitive thought process and why did he double back there instead of charging forward at his enemy? Why did he rotate around to flank from that side instead of the other side? Why did he throw a grenade up over that arch at that time? You know, and a good commentator makes it far more enjoyable to watch because they're sort of educating the viewer while
right.
The viewer is watching. And there are a few commentators who can do that and can do it really well, but it's not easy. You know, the few competitive matches that I've watched most recently have been live, you know, things like at conventions and events. And half the time, you know, they'll have a commentator and what they're speaking about is not even what you're seeing being projected on the main screens. So like, how is that fun to watch, right? So there's a lot that needs to go into developing the techniques behind broadcasting this, you know, making this something that casual people can watch and enjoy. People who don't even play Halo should be able to tune in and watch competitive Halo and enjoy it. And Call of Duty and all the other, you know, top competitive games, but it's going to take a while to get there. The other thing that I think is a bit of a problem for it right now is that, the games sort of can't be designed for these competitive players because if the games are designed up for the competitive community, then that's a niche, you know, it's
right.
A niche that the game, you know, the game would not sell what it needs to sell to be profitable. So you've got this awkward situation where, you know, Halo has struggled with this, where it's being designed for a crowd other than the competitive community. And the competitive community is having a hard time making it fit with their needs. So it's interesting. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it develops. Like I wouldn't be that surprised to see MLG coming out with their own game at some point, you know, something that's just something that's designed from the ground up by, you know, like MLG shooter, MLG, you know, brawler, MLG 2D
yeah.
fighter, like whatever. Right. And,
I think, though, that there are ways for Halo to cater to both communities, because we've seen it happen in the past before. Halo 3, for most people, is arguably one of the best multiplayer experiences, and you could have fun doing MLG, and you could have fun doing casual.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely a way to cater both of those audiences within Halo.
Well, something that I don't understand, And it goes back to what you were saying earlier. Each game is increasingly more casual than the last one somehow. And that kind of ascendancy doesn't make any sense to me. Like, if you're in the fourth game, it's assumed that you've already played the other three games and you are better at Halo than you were when you started playing. Like, you understand the systems of Halo in Halo 4 better than you did when you started playing in Halo 1 or Halo 2. But arguably, you could say that Halo 2 was more hardcore and pure in its mechanics than Halo 4, because Halo 4 was created with the casual in mind. And it doesn't make any sense. Like, it doesn't follow. It's a non sequitur. It is literally a non sequitur to go from saying, hey, these set of people that enjoyed Halo 2 and Halo 3, maybe those games were too hard for them, so we're going to kind of ratchet it down and make it easier for the casual to play in Halo 4.
Well, I think the answer to that is that the assumption that everybody who's playing Halo 4 has also played Halo 1, 2, and 3 is a false assumption. If you look at install base alone...
Well,
it doesn't seem
like that. It seems like they geared the Halo 4 experience more towards the casual players that just get on every now and then. And I think, personally, from my standpoint, I think that's kind of what's killing the longevity of the game.
Well, see, I mean, I personally agree with that. I think that, you know, a company like, you know, we can't forget Microsoft is putting the bill for this whole thing, right?
Yep.
And they're going to look at this and go, you know, in 2001, when Halo 1 came out, we had X number of Xboxes out on the market. And Halo 1 sold incredibly well within that install base. But the install base for the 360 is like so exponentially higher than that. Not to mention simple age brackets. I mean, there were kids who were 8 years old when the first Xbox came out who maybe never played it, and now they're 18 and they've got some money of their own and they're buying their own video games, and now they're like, oh, Halo 4, that sounds cool. You know, I think the majority of people who've played Halo 4 didn't play Halo 1 or 2. Maybe they played 3. We're the diehard fans, right? We're the guys who've been there from the start. And so for us, we're going to look at this and go, well, we're kind of being left behind here, guys, a little bit. You know, I mean, we're the ones who sort of helped bring this. Yeah, we've been along for the whole ride, and it sucks to see the game moving away from some of the core elements that we love about it so much. But I mean, that's a business decision, and it's up to the developers, it's up to 343 to magically do both, right? How do we make the game more appealing to a wider audience? Because I mean, let's not forget, you know, well, these days, like, I mean, what did Tomb Raider came out last month? It sold, what, 3 million copies? And its publisher is calling it a failure. 3 million copies is a failure these days. And that's freaking scary to a developer. That's terrifying. You know, the amount of money that goes into a game like Halo 4, they have to sell, you know, what, 5 million, 6 million, 10 million before it's considered, yeah, I guess it was worth making that. It's ridiculous. So, on the one hand, I don't blame them for trying to make it as easy to sit down and get into as possible, but I think there's got to be a way to hit that balance, and it's going to take you know, smarter people than me to figure that out.
Yeah, I personally think that the Halo experience needs to kind of harken back to some of those more core gameplay experiences and focus on the core community, because if you lose that core community, you're going to lose the longevity of the game. You're going to lose the momentum behind it for future titles down the road.
Mm-hmm.
I think that despite the competitive community being a small segment of the whole Halo community at large, I think they need to kind of drop back a little bit into that more, okay, let's make a game that we want to play, not necessarily one that is going to appeal to everybody. And I know there are certain business decisions where, yeah, it's, you want to optimize to as many consumers as you can get for your game. But at the same time, there's this whole drive that the community also puts forward to the game, where if you have all these big name people, like say if the three of us and a few other friends that we know, like Green Skull, Grim Brother One, Louis Wu, if they came out and said that Halo 5 was not that great of a game, that buyership, that consumer market that kind of relies on those communities for opinions about the game, that's going to shrink even more.
It could eventually. The problem is, I don't think you feel those effects for, I think it takes a few years for those effects to set in, because first of all, anybody, like, as I mean, this show is huge. I mean, we were talking about the numbers a few days ago, right? But anybody who's going to listen to this show has probably already bought Halo 4, right? And by the time we're playing Halo 5 and put enough time into it to discuss it and talk about it, by the time we come out and talk about it, everybody else who listens has already bought Halo 5 as well, you know? And so it's one of those things where there absolutely is a trickle down effect, but I think it takes a long time for it to set in, and it takes a long time for it to be noticed. And even when it is noticed, I mean, I don't know if it'll be noticed by everybody or not. I mean, who knows, right? I think my bigger sort of point of contention with designing for the lowest common denominator is that, I think you don't necessarily want everybody to want to play your game from a fun factor point of view, because I think games get better when people are playing them passionately, when people are playing them because they really want to be playing this game and they want to learn how to play it properly and they want to improve and they want to get better. And they enjoy the thrill of the moment-to-moment experience. And I think that happens less when you have a game that, you know, like you look at what's happened to Call of Duty, and it's a great game, there's no doubt about it, but it's turned into one of those games that, you know, half the people who are online playing it are only playing it because their friends are. They don't even actually like the game. They claim to not like the game. And that has a big effect on the moment-to-moment experience when you're playing with them, right? And I think the same thing is starting to happen with Halo. I mean, the sheer amount of obnoxious griefing that goes on in matchmaking and team killing for no reason, and it's just because there's people who, you know, don't really want to be there. They don't really care about the match that's going on, but it's, you know, the game that them and all their friends have, so that's what they're playing, and they don't care if they ruin the game for everybody else. And that is going to stop people from rushing out and pre-ordering Halo 5. That's going to stop people from, you know, getting involved with the community and getting involved in the game in a more substantial, serious way, in ways that made the game so successful in the first place. So that's, I think, where they have to be really careful.
Well, I just want to come back and say, like, I'm not saying that they don't have a large number of potential players that could come into the franchise. I'm just saying at this point in a franchise, Halo is pretty popular. When you buy an Xbox, you probably know about Halo at least a little bit. Like, you've seen the Master Chief, because he's pretty iconic. When, I mean, Nintendo has Mario, Sony has Nathan Drake now, and, you know, Xbox has the Master Chief. Like, every system has their own set of iconic figures, but you could argue that, I mean, it's pretty easy to argue that Microsoft's biggest Xbox icon is the Master Chief and Halo as a game.
Yep.
You know, you buy an Xbox, you probably buy Halo with it. Now, I mean, so if you bought an Xbox and you didn't want to buy Halo when you bought it, there's probably a good chance that it just didn't interest you at all. Like, the kind of games that you wanted to play wasn't Halo. Maybe you don't like first-person shooters. You know, maybe you don't like sci-fi for whatever reason and you own an Xbox 360. Like, if you didn't buy it before, it doesn't make any sense to throw the baby out with the bathwater trying to get those people to come into your game while at the same time alienating the people who do love Halo and do love those core mechanics and what Halo stands for. Now, I'm not saying the game shouldn't change. Like, to me, I mean, if you just stay the same constantly, then people really do stop buying your game. Unless you're Tetris. But, you know,
Halo,
I mean,
Tetris, ship it.
That'd be great. I'd play Halo Tetris. But,
so would I.
It should change, but it shouldn't change in a way that basically says, hey, all you players who enjoyed the past three games and those mechanics, we're going to take some of these mechanics, we're going to shift them, like, we're going to make pretty big changes to them. And if you don't like it, well, too bad, because we're trying to get new people in. Like, I'm just saying you can make changes that are enjoyable to players of all skill levels. You can make changes that everybody is going to enjoy without having to alter pre-existing mechanics that people already like about your game.
Right. Yeah.
And to me, like, that's where they should start spending their money, is figuring out what kind of changes can we make? What kind of improvements and additions can we make to the Halo formula, that golden triangle of melee, you know, grenades and weaponry? What can we do to understand that that is refined and beloved, and then improve on it without altering it? And there's ways to do that. But it's hard, and you have to think about game design on a very, really an intellectual level. You have to actually sit down and come up with things that other games have not done yet. You have to sit and you actually have to innovate. But what it felt like with Halo or Halo 4 is that they played Call of Duty, they liked some of that stuff, and they're like, we're just gonna take some of this and, you know, tweak it a little bit, make it Halo-esque, and put it in our game. Instead of actual innovation, instead of showing me something truly new, something truly revolutionary that will improve the game industry as a whole. I mean, think about it. Nobody complains about Spartan Ops. Like, people complain about Halo 4. They complain about mechanics in multiplayer. They complain about ordnance. They complain about, you know, respawn times, all of these things. But they don't complain about Spartan Ops. And essentially, I mean, they even replaced a pre-existing game type with Firefight to put Spartan Ops in the game. But nobody complains about it because that is a truly revolutionary thing for the franchise. And even the gaming industry. I mean, they're really, I can't think of a game that has had, you know, some sort of episodic, chapter-based, you know, secondary storyline in it like that.
Yeah.
And it's cool because it's new. That was something revolutionary. If they can keep on thinking of stuff like Spartan Ops, it will make the game better without altering, you know, the stuff that people love. That's where it's at. For me, I love Halo 4. Like, I still play it. I still talk about it. I'm not saying I hate Halo 4 or that I hate, you know, 343. I love those people. You know, 343 is, those people care about Halo probably more than the staff at Bungie did in those final few years. I mean, if you worked at Bungie for a long time and all you'd been making for the past decade was Halo, those people were probably burned out. That's why they were ready to move on to Destiny. But, you know, these are people who joined 343 or were offered jobs at 343 because they love Halo, the franchise. And it just seems odd that you have this group of people that loves Halo and obviously loves it. Nobody's debating that the people at 343 love Halo, but then they take things from a game that Halo fans have traditionally had a problem with. You know, I mean, Halo fans and Call of Duty fans, there's overlap there because it's, you know, first-person shooters, but traditionally you either landed on one side of the aisle or the other. Like, you either played Call of Duty or you played Halo, and you chose either one of those games because you didn't like something about the other game. Like, people that play Call of Duty like it because, you know, instant kills, you know, just shoot them in the chest three times with an M16 burst and they're dead. Whereas with Halo, you have the shield charge system, which was pretty revolutionary at the time when it first came out. And that's a completely different flow of gameplay because when you have shields, you can obviously take more hits and then hide and recharge if you want to. Or, you know, if somebody's shooting at you, you can actually encroach on them because you have your shields. And if you know the timing, you can get a kill in by melee or grenades or just normal confrontation that would be impossible in a game like Call of Duty.
Yep.
But either way, you chose your game because you like the mechanics in that particular game. And it doesn't make sense to me to say, well, people don't like Halo as much anymore or they're leaving. And I mean, that's natural. As franchises grow older, they become generally less popular. They don't get more popular over time. Like, the only franchise I can think that ever did that, I mean, to a large extent, was probably Star Wars. Like, after that initial trilogy came out, it gradually got more popular over time. But with video games, that doesn't really happen. The popularity of video games decreases as the game franchises get older. And at that point, it seems to me, instead of trying to get more fans in, you need to work on keeping the fans that are staying around, you know, around for another 5 years. Work on trying to retain the player base you already have instead of, you know, putting all of your chips into, you know, trying to get new players.
Right. I personally think 343 needs to focus on getting that core group back into the swing of Halo. And then I personally think the other casuals will start to come back into the fold. you're going to have those people that are going to go out and buy Halo just because it has the name Halo and there's advertising for it everywhere. But I still think that the core of the Halo community is a big part that plays a huge role in getting people excited about the game and having the longevity of a game be successful.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, you can work on that in other areas other than gameplay mechanics, too. Like you were saying earlier, fix Forge, you know, make improvements to Forge, make improvements to Theater. I mean, that's where the hardcore community is going to be at. If you want to retain a hardcore community, Theater and Forge is the place to do it. Because these are the people that are posting, you know, videos online. And to me, that's how you can kind of gauge the health of a community. Well, I mean, they're taking the game, they're playing it right, but what kind of content are they making that isn't... What kind of content are they making with that game? Like, what kind of content are they creating out of their own free will that isn't even necessarily a part of the game? Like,
well, we have the perfect example.
We care enough about Halo that... Yeah, we care enough about Halo that we, you know, take time out of our week to sit and talk about it for hours on end and then, you know, post our conversations out to people who then go and listen to it. You know, I mean, the people who listen to our show, they're making the same time investment as we're making to record it. Now, they don't have to edit and stuff. You know, that obviously takes more time, but.
Yeah, I gave up on editing a long time ago.
Yes, because you just finished making a whole season that you're finishing editing.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. Let's table this discussion because we've been talking about it for about 30 minutes now. and move on. I mean, it's good stuff. And we definitely go on these one-offs and talk about things that are very important to the Halo franchise, and especially for Halo's future.
Well, it's hard to talk about because we don't know what it's like, you know, developing Halo 4 or Halo 5. Yeah, I mean, we can get a small glimpse into that development atmosphere, but we don't know, you know, every single decision that comes down from Microsoft dictating, you know, what 343 has to do in this game or else they're not going to get their money, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Microsoft wears the pants in that relationship. So what Microsoft says goes regardless of what 343 wants. So I don't want to make it sound like this is a, you know, a diatribe against 343 or their design decisions. I mean, those people love Halo. If I had to guess why the changes that occurred in Halo 4 that I don't like happened, it was probably because of a Microsoft decision. That's just my guess.
Right. And I mean, that's kind of the... Like, that point kind of hurts because it is Microsoft that's behind Halo, and they're essentially driving some of the aspects of Halo where their creative freedom may be somewhat limited, but I think 343 is at least... There's a good portion of them that were community-based in the past for Halo, and they definitely want Halo to succeed. So it's not something that 343 is just going out of their way to make Halo a bad experience. It's they're trying and they're inexperienced. And just by the time Halo 5 comes out, they'll take experiences that they have from Halo 4, know what people were really looking for in the franchise down the line, and they're going to make Halo better. I can honestly say that I have firm belief in their ability to make Halo from here on out better than Halo 4 was.
Yeah.
And they're going to. They're learning their ways around the community and around making games now because they have their first one out there. And it's just going to take some time. So let's move back to the bulletin. We just covered the first topic of about four. The next one is the current state of weapon tuning. So 343 announced at PAX East that they were implementing the ability in the latest title update to actually go in and be able to tweak the settings automatically without having to push any matchmaking or title updates to the console and be able to do all those knob twisting behind the scenes. They're still working out some of the kinks. There are definitely some things that they want to make sure are balanced out and that are playable from an enjoyable perspective and balanced and competitive and all that stuff. So they have the disclaimer in here that what they're announcing on the bulletin for this week isn't anything that's set in stone. Things are subject to change. They mentioned specifically the precision weapons. There's been this kind of community bashing of heads over the power of the DMR and how useful some of the other precision weapons are to that particular weapon. So they've gone into some details here about what they've changed or what they're looking to change on the precision weapons. They've said that they think that the current state of the DMR really shouldn't be changed. The kill time should remain unchanged. And the fact that the community loves it, they don't want to change something that the community is already satisfied with kind of as a whole. But they do hear the cries to really balance out the rest of the precision weapons. So they're looking at making some tweaks on the battle rifle, the light rifle, and the carbine. And to that effect, they're having to alter some of the automatic weapons as well. For the battle rifle specifically, they're looking to decrease the kill time from a 5-shot to a 4-shot.
Halo 3 fans rejoice.
Yeah. Or to keep the 5-round burst and just reduce the rate of fire. So they're kind of working that balance and seeing which one actually plays the best. The light rifle, they said that they are adjusting the range for the red the reticle turning red to match that of the DMR. So for you expert Halo players, you'll know that whenever your reticle turns red, there's this magnetic effect that your reticle will stick to an enemy if the reticle is red.
To a certain degree, right?
To a certain degree, yeah. So that has been pushed out a little bit when you zoom in to match that of the DMR, so it's easier to get some of those zoomed-in shots. And personally, that was one of the reasons for me why I didn't use light rifle, because I had a hard time hitting those zoomed-in shots, a lot more difficult than the DMR.
Yeah, likewise.
So they've adjusted that to where it's equivalent now for the light rifle. For the carbine, they have adjusted it to be a 7-shot kill instead of an 8-shot kill. They feel that the players that learned to use this weapon were not rewarded when they trying to get kills just because of the time that it took to actually get the shots down. So instead of 8 shots, it now takes 7 shots to kill an enemy. With that said, they're adjusting some of the automatic weapons. Some of the things that they're looking at changing is the damage tables to be a little bit more damaging. Reducing the auto-aim stuff. So they're still messing around with some of those knobs in the background. Matchmaking update for next week. They highlight the Regicide playlist for this week, along with Griffball. So I didn't know that this was actually a thing, but apparently the community was really pushing to have Regicide be included in Rumble Pit. Now, this is the free-for-all Regicide, not the team Regicide that you have. Those are two separate playlists. But 343 has come out and said that they want to keep Regicide in its own playlist, but they're going to make, of course, some game type changes, just a little changes here and there to just keep the game in balance. And they're making a few map changes. They're taking out Complex, and they're adding Landfall, Dispatch, Simplex, and Scythe. So Regicide is getting a kind of a refresh with having new maps, so that's always nice to see. Along with Regicide, of course, like I said before, is Griffball updates. So some of the game types between Griffball and Griffball Pro, or some of the settings, weren't exactly the same. They kind of tailored both experiences to be a little different. Griffball is supposed to be kind of the Griffball Infinity stuff. And then Griffball Pro is supposed to be more classic, to where it's when you plant the bomb, the rounds reset, and it's more of that classic experience. But the settings in terms of damage, shield resistance, shield damage, and all that stuff has been balanced between the two game types now. And the only distinguished difference between the two is how the scoring works. So in Griffball, it's first to 5 captures in one round. And then in Griffball Pro, it's the best of 5 rounds and 1 score per round. Some of the Griffball courts were updated to fix some kill zone boundaries, some ball getting stuck in certain areas. So just little map cleanups that needed to be done, apparently. So nothing huge on the update front, but if you're a big Griffball person, it is good to note those game type changes that are going into effect for each of those possible game types when you get into matchmaking. There's one more update to the whole playlist stuff. And that is the multi-team Slayer used to have a score limit of 300, and they're going to up that to 500 instead, just because of how quickly that some of these multi-team games actually ended. Before we move on, I want to ask you two this question. What's your opinion of the whole having six teams of two? Because I know with people that I've played with, just about everyone I've talked to would have preferred four teams of three.
Yeah, I would have preferred that. I haven't done enough of it to, you know, really have a strong opinion one way or the other. But yeah, I was surprised that they went that way.
Brent, what about you?
It kind of feels like FFA in a way, when you have so many teams with so few players on each.
Yeah, and a high likelihood of your one teammate bailing out for no good reason.
Yeah. If I wanted to play team doubles, I'd play team doubles. I really don't play multi-team enough to care. I remember really enjoying it in Halo 2 and a little bit in Halo 3. And I mean, and now that it's six teams of two, I just really don't care about it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't ruin the game. Like, oh man, it should have been four teams of three. Like, I'm never playing Halo again. did it. This is the straw that broke the camel's back.
I just think of it from a perspective of looking at the multi-team from Halo Reach, because that was even hectic, because you had 12 people fighting against three in certain situations, just from grenade chunking, depending on where you were on the map, you would get shot from four different enemies at once. And then with six teams of two, that balance is thrown even more off.
Yep.
And I personally think the balance of four teams of three is a lot better. I think that's the balance for multi-team. I don't think it should be any other way. Now, four teams of four, I mean, that can be a lot of fun depending on what game type you're playing. But I really think it should have been four teams of three. And even with the ways, I know some of these maps for the castle map pack, it works okay with six teams of two, just because of the map layout. But in terms of actually enjoying the game types and enjoying playing on the playlist, in my opinion, four teams of three is more enjoyable. Moving on. Last thing for the matchmaking update is the join in progress stuff. They're still tweaking that balance. They're adjusting the windows on free-for-all playlist and team playlist to match kind of the flow of the game and make sure that the experience isn't really interrupted by anyone joining, or anyone that is joining doesn't feel adversely affected by having to join a game in progress. And so far, I've personally never had much of a problem with joining progress. There have been my handful of games where I've joined in about a minute in and the other team is already beating my team 120-20. But I haven't seen those lately within like the last 2 months.
It's one of those things that's going to be anecdotally different from person to person, right? I mean, I personally have never had too much of a problem with it either. I know there's a few people I follow on Twitter where I'll be watching them one night and they'll be like, yeah, six games in a row where I joined in progress onto the losing team on a ranked playlist, a team ranked playlist. It's like, that sucks. You know, that really, really sucks. I think there's things they can do to improve the join in progress. And now that they have the CSR ranks, I think there's things they should really take into consideration there as well. Like, you know, maybe not have join in progress on a playlist where your team play affects your rank, right? Like, you don't want to get spawned into a losing game and de-rank because of it. That sucks. So.
Well, someone brought up in the chat room the good point, actually Halo Fan for Life, is there needs to be the option to disable join in progress.
Yeah, I think that would be great. Just get rid of it.
I don't think getting rid of it, because I do like the idea of having people come in and fill spots. Like, there have been times where people have dropped down my list and it's like, oh, well, and this is more evident towards like past Halo games because we didn't have this, but there's like, oh, well, this game is going to be interesting. I'm either going to have a fun time with the other team or just going to joke around, or I'm just going to get pwned. So that join in progress idea, I like the idea.
Well, I think I shouldn't have said just get rid of it. What I meant is get rid of it in certain places. You know, like what we had in, I think that having having Join in Progress directly connected to, you know, whether or not there's ranks makes sense. You know, if you want to play a casual game, you're just going in to have fun, you can have Join in Progress, have players come and go. It doesn't matter that much. But if you're playing, if you are playing for a rank and you're taking it seriously and you want to do well and you want to rank up and you want to improve, then disable Join in Progress on those playlists. Now, that of course doesn't fit in with the current CSR design, right? But I think there's a way to do that there and give everybody what they want, right? Give both sides what they want.
Yeah. It's just gonna. Anyways, that kind of wraps up the bulletin for this week. There are the screenshots on the bottom. So this week's theme is Griffball. So you can see some pretty cool Griffball screenshots up there. In terms of a favorite, I'm going to go with, I think Fireball is actually my personal favorite.
Yeah, that one's great.
Lone Star, I think, would be a close second. But other than those two, I mean, they look okay. There's been some other group of screenshots in the past where it's like, I can't choose. I think Space was one of those I couldn't choose between them. But this one is narrowed down for me. And Fireball, I think, is my personal favorite. And Lodestar is my second one.
I like Mistville. It's pretty cool. Got kind of a smoky effect to it.
It's all right for me.
Yeah.
Just don't do it for me. Like Griffball, the one that's just the picture of the Griffball, it's like, really?
Here it is, Griffball.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not the most impressive set of screenshots they've had. But
no, it's not.
There's only so much you can do from a single game type as far as, you know, what kind of screenshots you can take.
Right. Okay, so we're getting close to the end, but before we get there, we have some show notes and submissions to read off. So we asked last week, our question of the week was, which map of the Castle DLC was your favorite? I think we talked about this a little bit last week for Brent and me, so I'm going to go ahead and pose the question to Cruel Legacy. What has been your favorite map out of the Castle DLC playlist so far?
Oh, Daybreak by far. By far.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. I'm hearing a lot more people like Daybreak. It doesn't work for me.
It definitely needs to be on the right game types. It's not a all-purpose Halo map. For sure. I love CTF on it. I find King of the Hill is actually surprisingly fun on it too. Straight up Slayer, not so much. I find it kind of dull. But it has that, like, it reminds me, it's the closest we've come in Halo 4 to those epic CTF games that I used to have in Halo 3 on you remember Standoff, the map with the big satellite dishes?
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite CTF matches because it was...
Standoff was a fun map. That was one of the best DLC maps I've ever played.
They hit that balance of size where the map kind of naturally scaled to suit whatever number of players you had going on it. Meaning, like, the bases were actually physically close together. If you had only four people playing, it worked. Like, you could do it. But if you had a bigger, you know, big team game, 8v8, there was all this peripheral space out on the sides where everybody sort of naturally drifted out to fill up more space. And I find Daybreak works in a similar way. You can have a really tight focus game, or then if you get a big population, a big crowd in, you can spread out and the fighting starts to take place in different areas of the map. It also has something I find extremely rare in Halo 4 maps, and this is something we touched on in the last time I was on, just last week with Pete the Duck, but you have that sort of this element where the combat is very different depending which section of the map you're in. It's not like I'm already drawing a blank on. Is it Outcast? Is that the other DLC map that just came out with
Outcast, Perdition, and Daybreak?
Yeah, so Outcast is fun, but my problem with Outcast is that you play pretty much the same no matter where you are on the map, no matter what game type you're playing. The terrain is just generic enough that you're sort of like, okay, check down the long hallway here and check down the long hallway there, and wherever you are, there's people hiding behind the little rock pillars. But Daybreak has enough unique terrain elements in it. Like fighting in the middle is a very different set of terrain than fighting out on the side. So, you know, you find a lot of just different types of combat. You might get a lot more melee combat in one section, whereas in another section it's all long range shooting. And I like that. I like that a lot in Halo. That holy trinity of grenade, weapon, and melee. And I find in Halo 4, it all too often boils down to weapon, weapon, and weapon, right? Like, I find that the grenades and melee just fall into the background in a lot of the game. So Daybreak is bringing it back, baby.
Nice. I'm still tied between Outcast and Perdition. Depending on the game type, really depends on, like, helps, would be the determining factor of which one I like the most. Daybreak is actually on my least favorite.
Yeah.
That's down at the bottom for me. I forget what Brent said his was.
Excuse me, I got to go get my podtacular tattoo removed.
Oh,
I kid.
Oh, come on. I gave you a shirt.
I know. I love it.
I like Perdition. It's pretty fun. Just the vehicle combat on that map kind of takes me back to kind of those Halcyon Halo 3 days of, you know, to vehicular, you know, just running around, tearing it up with those things. A lot more ghost kills than I've ever gotten in Halo 4 prior to that map coming out, so that's cool. I like Daybreak, but every CTF match that I ever play in, I always get frustrated because I never win. And I don't know if it's me or if it's the team that I'm on or if it's like some sort of weird, like they didn't get the symmetry right between the bases or what's going on, but I cannot win a CTF match on Daybreak to save my life. And I'm a decent CTF player. Like I love CTF. It's my favorite objective game type and I just can't do it. I don't know what it is. I got to figure that out.
Someone posted this in the chat, which I've never thought about this, but it would be interesting for Halo because it's kind of a spinoff of Regicide. But for any COD players out there, Alyssa Soros in the chat said, can't wait to see kill in order to be in Halo 5. What would you guys think of that, where you're basically given a target, you have to kill that target, and then go around killing other targets? Like, say, if you killed another Spartan, you got the 10 points that you normally got. But then a twist off of that would be, with Regicide, you're given a target, and if you kill your target, you get maybe 20 or 25 points instead. That would be cool.
Yeah. That could be interesting.
That'd be an interesting twist on the game.
I played another game that had a game type like that, and I'm trying to remember what it is.
That's really the only first-person shooter I can think of that has it. Call of Duty. Oh, yeah. Well, I guess it's kind of Assassin's Creed-ish.
Oh, that's exactly what I was thinking of.
Okay, okay. I figured that might have been what you were talking about. It's Assassin's Creed.
Yep.
But I do say that if they're going to bring back any, if they're going to make any game type, they need to bring back race. We need to have race back. It is a pinnacle game type, in my opinion, to Halo, because it was in Halo 1. And when they brought it back in Halo Reach, we saw amazing, amazing race maps on Forge World.
Oh, yeah.
That needs to come back. And I think we even talked about that last time on our Forge show, where that race game type needs to be brought back into Halo.
We touched on it briefly, yeah.
So it's, yeah. I would love to see that back. Okay, into some user submissions. Our first one is from Karts. He says, my favorite map from the Castle DLC is Daybreak. So there's another person to agree with you there, Nevin.
Mm-hmm.
I love using the Banshee and going on bombing sprees. I remember one game that I was getting hit markers a lot, but not getting as many kills as usual. But eventually, the entire enemy team were shooting plasma in the air, and my team could cap 3 easy flags from the distraction I caused. Yeah, we discussed the whole Banshee thing last week, and I think Brent and I came to the consensus that it needs to be taken out. At least certain game types needs to be taken out. Like capture the flag, it needs to go out of there.
It can really dominate if it's in the right hands.
Well, during the Mad Cats unveiled event, like the pre-PAX party that I went to, someone got the Banshee. I can't remember who it was, but it may have been Drax from Ready Up Live, but he went basically on a killing frenzy or a running riot with the Banshee and basically just dominated the other team. And it was unbearable.
Well, see, I personally,
I mean, I don't see that happening as often in Halo 4 because you can spawn with freaking plasma pistols. Like, if your team is paying any attention at all, it's actually pretty easy to bring down a Banshee in Halo 4 because the Banshee is so clunky as far as its maneuvering. Like, it, have you ever tried to barrel roll on Daybreak? You can't do it without smashing into a rock because it's like the map isn't wide enough for you to barrel roll cleanly. So there's such confined movement that I personally don't have a problem with it. I find that that you can take it down easily enough unless you're playing against people who just are not paying attention or can't communicate with each other, right?
Right.
I mean, that's been a classic problem in Halo, though, is people don't understand that they need to shoot at the Banshee.
Yeah.
Like, I remember back on Boneyard and Halo Reach, like, that Banshee would go around dominating and nobody would actually think to just look up and start shooting at it. Like,
yeah.
It's never going to come down unless some sort of damage or plasma pistol shot or something happens to it. Like, you're just going to keep, you know, if you get killed over and over and over again by the Banshee, you would think eventually you might have some sort of compulsion to go take it out. But that never seems to happen with some teams.
Well, a lot of times when you're going into that matchmaking mentality, whenever you're getting dominated by the Banshees, because you're usually probably going in with one or two people, you're not going with a full team that has those loadouts set to where people know that there's a Banshee on here. One or two people need to have a plasma pistol in their secondary as a loadout.
And well,
for me, I kind of stick with one loadout. I kind of stick with my DMR and Magnum loadout just because I'm more of a on foot in your face kind of person, and that weapon combo is the one that best works for me, and I rarely switch. But even with the Banshee in the right hands, even with the plasma pistol out there, the Banshee has the power to dominate that map. There's not much flying space, but there is a good possibility for the Banshee to at least do a substantial amount of damage that can actually turn the tide of a match. And I think, especially for things like CTF, the Banshee just needs to be taken out. Slayer, I couldn't care less about in terms of whether or not the Banshee was on there, but for CTF, it, in my opinion, it definitely needs to be taken out. That's my opinion.
I love it. More Banshees. I'd rather have two.
All right. Nevin, you want to read the next one since it's kind of a... It has a machinima twist to it, but if you want to read the next one.
Is this the one from
Creative Generations?
Yes.
Yep, that's the one.
Hello, Podtacular. Thank you for reading our earlier submission. You asked us to send you guys some footage when we came out with it, so here's a link to our new teaser trailer, and there's a link there. To answer your question of the week, my favorite map of all time would be the Pit from Halo 3. I love the symmetry of the bases, the sniping towers, the epic race for rockets and camo at the center of the map. It makes for some nice laughs. Keep up the great work, guys. Keep on fragging those bolt shot noobs.
Yay. Bolt shot noobs.
I have to.
You'll have to forgive me for not remembering when or what you submitted to our show, but I did watch the trailer. It is pretty interesting. I just posted it in the chat for all of our listeners to go watch. It's about a minute and a half long if you're interested. So, yeah, sorry, Brent. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just going to say that the other day I was playing a King of the Hill game and I kind of abused the bolt shot, so I'm guilty. I'm guilty of finally doing to other people what they have done to me for the past 5 or 6 months, you know. I mean, they were asking for it. They were, like, running right at me, and the bolt shot was, like, laying on the ground. I didn't spawn with it. It was just laying there, and I picked it up and started using it.
Fair play.
It was fun for me. It probably wasn't fun for them.
Right.
But I just had to put that out there.
I don't ever spawn with the bolt shot. I will pick one up and use it, but I will never spawn with it.
I've got a loadout set up with it, which I'll use as my anti-bolt shot loadout. So if I'm playing a match where lots of other people are abusing it like crazy, I'll pick one up myself and join in on the fun.
Yeah, it gets to that point where you kind of have to join in just to push back at what they're doing. Yeah. It's ridiculous. I still think that 15-foot range is too much. I think it needs to be, I am up in your face. Like, I can reach out to you with my arm.
And I just have a problem with the idea of spawning with a shotgun.
Yeah.
Essentially, that's what you're doing. It has shotgun functionality, except you spawn with it. And it's a little bit harder to use. I guess that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Next one from GameDude. Yes. You want to hit that one?
GameDude03 says, "Hey, PodTac, my fave map is going to be Perdition. I like the feel of the map, and the ghost was a lot of fun, and splattering wasn't all of the fun. I can definitely agree with Brent. Anyway, I love 361 and how you dug deep in the history of Forge. Dustin, you spoke of a $300 modification pack for Halo 5. It sounded like Gary's mod. Gary's mod was a Source Engine, an example, Team Fortress 2 Portal, and Half-Life 2. You can play around and download all kinds of mods like Star Wars, anime, Stargate, and Halo. BRs, Marine Helmets, Rocks, Grunts, Elites, Covenant Cruisers, and UNSC Frigates, and that's just a sample. Just $10 to do whatever you want. Now, as I and a lot of people want this Gary's mod slash Far Cry 3 thing for Halo, I know that's probably unlikely, but we can always dream. So thanks for reading my sub. Ah, sub, get it, Subway."
So, yeah, I didn't even think about Gary's mod. That's kind of just a physics engine. It's just a blank playground. It's the engine behind it. I think for Halo, you would definitely need more than just Gary's mod version of the Halo engine. I think there's a lot more in there that people would need structure in order to actually be attracted to buying something like this modification pack. Right. In my personal opinion. But I mean, Nevin, if you could basically create your sets from scratch, without having to rely solely on Forge, if you could add extra things in there that aren't just the Forge pieces, if you could add custom pieces in there, would you pay something like $200 for it for basically lifetime of being able to make basically your own stage?
It did.
Or would you pay some amount of money?
Would I have to buy it per game? Or are you talking about like a one-time subscription fee?
No, I would say like per game. So like say Halo 5, if they came out with this, it would be like a $200 dev kit, but it's only a one-time thing.
It depends. Like, for example, for Halo Reach, I absolutely would have, right? Halo 4,
Could put in all the bells and whistles that you could possibly think of. Say you could import enemy classes, you could import Marines, you could import textures, you could make your own textures, you can make your own actors if you wanted to. You could have some kind of like 3ds Max plugin that goes into this thing. Would you buy something like that?
Again, it depends a little bit on some of the other factors of just the base game. For Halo Reach, I would have, definitely.
So C343, the incentive's there. Proof right there.
Yep.
Our last submission comes from Sal DiPietro. He writes in, "I was listening to your Forge podcast when I realized I never responded to your request about allowing my name to be given for the donation. You can say my name regarding the donation." So the $100 donation that we got a month ago was from Sal DiPietro. So we thank you very much for your donation. And it has actually helped us get Turbo Twitch. So if everyone that is listening to the live stream right now, you can thank him for our Turbo Twitch subscription. So that gives you ad-free listening to our stream on Twitch TV for the podcast, for our game nights, and for everything that we plan to do in the future. So big shout outs to him for giving us that donation. He goes on to say, "I really appreciate all the hard work that you guys do on the podcast and enjoy listening to them. I have always been a fan of the Halo universe, and I'm glad to be able to support you in providing us with great insights and commentary. I'm also hoping to have a Monday night where I can come home early enough to join in on the Monday night matchmaking." Blech. Thanks again, Sal. So again, cool. huge shout outs to him for the donation that he gave to us.
Definitely.
Wait, doesn't that guy have a website or something?
I don't know if he has a website or not. He didn't say. I'd have to go back and find the donation email and see. I think it was a Gmail account, so I don't know. Are you thinking of Halo Fan for Life?
Yeah, I thought it was Halo Fan
no,
for Life.
No, this is a different Sal. Okay. This is a different Sal.
Man, never mind. That guy doesn't have a website. Well, he
yeah.
might.
No. anyway, no, Halo Fan for Life is... Yeah. Halo Fan for Life is Chris Salerno. Sal DiPietro. Yeah.
I did not... Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. Never mind.
Yeah. After that confusion... I want to thank Cruel Legacy for coming on our show and talking about Playtime Season 4. It's a very exciting machinima. I think you guys will really enjoy it. If you're fans of other Halo machinima series out there, like Matchmaking, Red versus Blue, if you remember what the Codex was back in the day,
I don't know that one myself.
Oh, it's a good one. You should definitely watch it. It was one of those machinimas that it wasn't as big as Rooster Teeth, but it came out about the same time, and it was almost on par quality with Rooster Teeth.
He was the other Beetle, basically, right?
Pretty much. As far as those machinima series go, Playtime is up there among, in my opinion, of a well-produced machinima series.
Well, thank you.
So, especially with a few, since you have some more voice actors helping you out now instead of having you just do most of the voices.
I think it makes a big difference, don't you? Now it that definitely you've makes seen a big most difference. Of it, like looking back on it, it really is.
It definitely makes a big difference.
Yeah. And if I could take just a real quick second, the one other thing I just wanted to give a quick shout out to is that I've finally I've had people asking me for the Playtime soundtracks for ages, and I released volume one of the Playtime soundtrack like 2 years ago. And I've finally gotten around to, I've released the season three soundtrack a couple weeks back, and then just, yesterday, the season four soundtrack came out. So, that if you like the music in the show, if you want to take a listen and check it out, it's all stuff that I've recorded myself, and, you can find it on, it's on iTunes, it's on cdbaby.com, amazon.com, all the usual places where you go to download music. And I've got a SoundCloud page. It's under the name Cruel Legacy, where you can listen to it all for free. So it's all there too, if you just want to check it out and see what it's like.
Very nice. And you were actually gracious enough to give me a copy of the Playtime Season 4 soundtrack. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, no, thank you, man. I mean, I can't pay you, so you know, I gotta, you know, throw you some gratitude somehow. So,
oh, we appreciate it. So with that said, I think we are done for the show, guys. Thank you for everyone in the live stream for making it out here. And just to give a recap to those listening from a download perspective, We topped 30 listeners on the stream at once, and I gave a challenge out to that I would give away a code for Microsoft Points if we hit 25, and we did. So thank you to everyone out there who managed to tune into the stream and be able to give me the ability to give these out, because that's a huge improvement for us. I think our previous record was 16. Or 15, one of those two. So we basically doubled that tonight. So I want to give shout out to everybody that came out here, and we will be giving that 400 Microsoft point code away here in a moment. You can find us on our website, podtacular.com, and while you're there, send us an email, shoot us a submission. There's the green button on our homepage that you can use to send us anything that's Halo-related. So if you have any questions of any of our past shows, if there's any funny Halo stories that you want to tell us, or anything that's Halo-related, whether you have your own machinima, if you're making art, if you have a community that you want us to highlight or get in touch with, definitely shoot us an email. You can use the green button on our homepage, or you can send us an email directly to submissions@podtacular.com. Also, make sure you follow us on our social networks. We have Twitter, we have YouTube, we have Facebook, and we also do our podcast live stream, like I mentioned before. So that is on Twitch TV, and we also do our game nights broadcasted live on Twitch TV. So all of those events usually happen at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 5:30 p.m. Pacific time, and that is 1:30 p.m. British time. So if you are awake during those times, then definitely come on over and give us a listen for the podcast, and then for the game nights, watch while you're waiting to get in, or just watch for the enjoyment of Halo. So our game nights are as follows. On Mondays, we have Monday Night Matchmaking, and I'm actually going to go ahead and say this now, but we're going to take that matchmaking game night to an every other week format. We've been doing it every week pretty much since the beginning of Halo 4. But since the matchmaking updates are now being done every other week, we're going to match that as well. So we're going to have our Monday Night Matchmaking again this following Monday on the 21st. But from then on, we are going to be having Monday Night Matchmaking every other week to reflect the bulletin update. And that just is so I have time to work on other things. Like, there's a project that I'm working on, which I'll plug here in a second. There's my Spartan Ops book that I've been working on that I need to finish, which, cool. Nevin, I think I've showed that to you before.
I don't think so.
Okay, I'll have to show it to you.
Yeah, definitely.
After the show. There's a couple other things I want to do for Podtacular that I really want to try to get done, and one of them that I need to get done is the new forums. So I've rebooted that effort from the ground up, and I want to have time to do that. So Monday Night Matchmaking will start being in the format of an every other week format, similar to how Halo 2 game nights are done. So there's Halo 2 Tuesdays, which has been done on the second and fourth Tuesdays of the month. So next week, we'll actually have our Halo 2 Tuesday. So on April 22nd, we'll have that one as well. And then there's Wacky Wednesdays, and that is on, of course, Wednesdays. Our normal podcasting days are on Thursdays, but we do have special podcasts that we record. So this last one that we did on, which was last Sunday, Cruel Legacy, you were on this show along with Pete the Duck, and we talked about Forge. So a good way to not miss those is, of course, subscribe to all of our social networks. Make sure you check out our website, and of course, follow us on Twitch. So if you want to know when we broadcast live, for those offshot episodes, go create an account on Twitch, follow us, and then you'll receive an email notification the minute that we go live. And every time that we start our podcast, I play the 117 song from the Halo soundtrack. And that usually lasts 7 minutes, so that gives you a 7-minute buffer to get into the stream before we actually start recording. So definitely check that out. It would be much, much appreciated. Finally, just like Sal DiPietro, not Sal Halo Fan for Life, did, we do the show for free. We don't ask, we don't have to have you subscribed in order to get the show. We do this all of our own pockets, and we count on people like Sal and other people that have donated in the past to help us keep the website going. Other than that, I pay for this out of pocket. But if you guys have an open heart and you're willing to send us something, we have a donation button on our homepage, and you can definitely give us any amount that you want to help support the website. So that would be, anything that you're willing to give would be much appreciated. And of course, you would get the shout out on the show if you so request it.
As someone who runs my own site, even something as simple as a dollar can make a surprising difference if you get just a few people giving a dollar each. So I really encourage anyone who listens to the show to do that. It makes a big difference.
Right. Okay. That wraps up the stream, I believe, for us and this show. Last thing I want to plug before we head out is a special project I've been working on, which is called The Halo Mole, and you can check that out at thehalomole.com. So with that said, I appreciate you guys listening to the show. I hope that our competitive discussion wasn't too boring for some people, and our discussions about the longevity of Halo was not as equally boring, but I believe it's something that a lot of the community has been talking about, and something that I think is very close and dear to all of our hearts, as I'm sure you could tell from the heated discussions that we had tonight. So please give Cruel Legacy a look. He's over at playtimeshow.com. And
for anybody, I don't know if we mentioned it or not, but for anybody who wants to check out the show, and they just if you're on the Halo Waypoint site on a regular basis, the new season comes out on all forms of Halo Waypoint. So if you like to look at it on the dashboard, on your 360, it'll be there. Or you can find it on the on the mobile site or the web browser as well. So I encourage everyone to check it out if you've got a few spare minutes.
All right. With that said, everyone, thank you again for listening, and we will see you next time. Peace.
Later, guys.
Keep on bragging incoherent rants at the beginning of the show from me.
Okay. I'll make sure I start doing that.
Okay. Just frag them. Just edit them all out. Like, just take me out of the podcast completely. Like, I'll come record.
Oh, I can't do that. I can't do that.
No, I'll come record, and then, like, you can just take out the parts that you don't like, which is most of it.
I like all of the parts of Brent.
Oh, boy. All of them?
All of them. All the parts of Brent. All the parts. All right.
Keep on fragging hashtag mole.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, gosh. Here we go.